Hey everyone, welcome to the Family Business Podcast. My name is Dominique Sampson.
And my name is Malobi Sampson II.
And on this podcast, we're going to talk about everything from relationships, careers, God, therapy. Listen, we are talking about it all.
So sit back, relax, and let us take you on the adventure of a lifetime. Hey.
Hello, hello. Welcome back to another episode of The Family Business. So today, y'all, we are going to jump right in and introduce you to our topic for the day. Whoop. We are going to be talking about business decisions and making a decision to like land right in your purpose. And we're going to do that today with Malobi. He's going to share his journey, and then we'll, you know, do another back end where I share my journey and we'll kind of go from there. But this podcast is really dedicated to that young professional family, that person and that those people who are trying to figure out life and do it while they are not forsaking family or forsaking their careers. Interestingly enough, we went to a screening the other day in New York City where they were kind of talking about the same thing.
Pretty cool.
But amongst creatives specifically. And they were talking about this idea of balancing work, life, time with your creative job and your creativity. And I think it's a hot topic really right now. Because a lot of people, it went from being this like generation of people who were like, nope, I just want to focus on my career and not have children. But you kind of are starting to see the pendulum swing back where people want to have families. And I'm not sure if it's just our age that we're in or if that's literally what's happening, that more and more people want to be married and have children and that whole thing, but don't want to forsake the job. And their career specifically.
Yeah, it's definitely interesting. I think we are the generation whose children, because our parents, I think, at least in my family, my parents, they get married young. They get started with their whole families young. Everything starts a lot younger. And in our generation growing up, a lot of times it was no focusing on your career. Man, if you weren't held back by a family, you could really do so much. So it was often talked about as from a place of go and be and go do as much as you can, because, and it came from a place of, we don't want you to struggle, right? So because we don't want you to struggle, get yourself together first. And then when you get yourself together, then the person you're supposed to be with will come alongside you.
Which is such a different way to think. I think different geographic locations have different meanings on this whole thing. Different families have different meanings on this whole thing. And I know going to college in Kansas and being out there in the Midwest, their whole like mindset and thought was marry younger, like right when you come out of college, because you're both trying to grind and figure out who you want to be, and you might as well do that stuff together. And that way it fortifies the marriage long term, opposed to doing those things individually and then coming together. I think either way you would have your own set of struggles, whether you wait or whether you do it sooner. But I think it's interesting because that perspective is like, duh, you're going to struggle. I remember talking to one of my friends and they were like, yeah, duh, we're going to struggle. We know that. We know when you first get married, you don't have a lot of money. And so we know that. And eventually you find your purpose and you figure it out together and then you make more money. And so thinking about that, I think sometimes in the Black culture, we're like, no, do it right. Like the first time you do it right. Where in the countercultures, it's more so like, just keep doing it. And as you keep doing it, then eventually it will come out right.
Yeah, I think, but there's also like a lot more shifts than just it being a Black and white issue. I just think culturally, there's a lot of things that have shifted, right? Like, there's a statistic that says there's more Black women in college than any other ethnic or gender group. And so it's like, okay, that comes from the push of like, hey, go to school, get your education, become educated. Because when you do become educated, then you'll be able to really see and understand how to be this independent woman who can take care of yourself. I think there could also be a lot of people in college who their parents come from a place of being dependent on one spouse or the other. And so it was like, no, you got to be able to stand on your own. And the challenge with that cultural thinking, because I think if we look too back at the civil rights time, a lot more people got married. You mm-hmm. look at right before the civil rights movement, we definitely were getting married and doing families because mm-hmm, mm-hmm. it was segregated. It was, you needed a family to do a farm. You needed a family to provide. Also, women were more limited, or maybe their focus was just different, right? Because mm-hmm. I think it's World War II where women start to actually get into the workforce because men are at war. And so they now have women and children working during that time. And so that's when that introduction to the woman and labor force really starts to shift on a whole cultural mm-hmm, mm-hmm. level. So that happened. And then I think going forward, it became this thing of like, well, why can't women do it just like men? And so then you have this fight now to like try to equalize it on so many fronts. That makes sense. And so I think that plays into currently where we are today, where we're also coming out of that. But now there's also a question too around family and mm-hmm, like, mm-hmm. and sometimes you don't know that you want a family until you start to see other young families and mm-hmm. you're like, man, like, yeah, I'm working hard and doing all this thing and that feels great. Mm-hmm. But when I look to my left or to my right, other people have a spouse, mm-hmm. they have kids, mm-hmm. they have a house, they have all these things. And so then you start to, not even that you want what they have, but you start to think to yourself, what
is there more to life than yeah. what I'm currently doing?
What am I leaving? I'm working all this hard. And now who do I find that's either equal to me? Who do I find who I can have a conversation with? Mm-hmm. Who do I find who's like-minded? So I hear you when you're talking about building as you are on the ground level and not getting to, you know, the 16th floor and you're like, oh, hey, who else is on the 16th floor with me? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But really trying to find
having somebody that you go up the elevator with.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's definitely a unique and different way to think about things than from how I was raised.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I know we talk about this often. You know, in my family, my mom was a single mother, and she, you know, raised me and raised us to believe that, you know, we didn't need another person around to do anything that we needed to do, that we could accomplish, you know, anything we wanted to accomplish on our own. And I think, you know, I always was the kid that said, well, I want to, you know, be married and have a family and be a mom and like that super traditional life. But I think low-key I was craving stability in a lot of areas, like emotionally, mentally, for my own self.
That makes sense.
So I think that for me, I think that's what I thought having a family and those things looked like. I was reading a book yesterday. I'll link the link below, and you can check out this book for our resource of the day. But I'll link the link below, and it's called Sacred Marriage. And in this book, it talks about this idea that in marriage, there is both heartache and passion and love coexisting and not in equal parts. Hmm. And how if we get married thinking that we are marrying for pure happiness, then we are immature in our thoughts, but that our marriages are supposed to direct us to God. And when they direct us to God and force us to look, there is a stripping away of the person's selfish self that has to happen in order for that to happen, which can cause heartbreak and heart pain.
Yeah. I definitely agree with that quote, you know, especially with thinking, what are you going into a marriage believing or thinking? Mm-hmm. We're supposed to be talking about business, but
I was just getting ready to transition it there.
Yeah, I think there's an interesting, there's some nuggets in there to be dug out for sure. Mm-hmm. For sure.
Come on, bring it.
Well, I think even if I had to sort of connect this to the business thing as well, just thinking about how when you're going into any sort of partnership or agreement, if you go in thinking it's going to be one thing, when those expectations are not met, mm-hmm. then there many times is some form of disappointment.
Right.
And so I know even for my case, I thought that after you got married, you didn't have to really do any more work.
I remember you saying that. And I remember being there.
And so in that way and in that space, I was just like, you know, I was really shocked when that wasn't the case.
Well, what do you mean? Because we're going to talk about your business, right? And we're going to talk about how you got to that place. And we're going to talk about what you're doing right now in the business. But if we could park here for just a moment.
Let's do it.
When you are talking about you thought you were going to get married and not have to do anything, what does that mean?
I felt like you pursued or you chased before you got married. Mm-hmm. So you had to do a lot more, if that makes sense. You had to court. You had to go out. You had to think ahead for certain things and pre-plan. And I guess, in a sense, when I say it out loud, it sounds absolutely terrible. But you had to be romantic. You know, you had to, like, maintain your look, maintain like just so much about you, in hopes that you would catch or attract the right thing. And then
not thing, can she be a person though?
Okay, you attract the right person. And then once you attract the right person, boom, you've caught them. And then it's like, okay, cool, now I get to relax. And so I think tied to that as well was like not having a future plan, like not knowing to think about what the plan was, and how my role evolved. Because I saw the role as like, you just got to catch them. It wasn't the role of keeping them or even like growing, you know. And not that I didn't have a good model of what growing looked like. I definitely did. It was just that in my mind, part of it is that it wasn't talked about. Part of it was that it was something where, and I don't know if this is common or not, but I don't know how many men are sitting down with younger men and saying, hey, son, this is what we're doing. This is where our family is going. This, and sort of just walking through that with them. And
like giving them perspective and vision over what the family is.
Yeah.
You're saying rather than just doing, be a doer and saying, like both having both of those things.
Right. Partner. Okay. Because sometimes it's like, you know, your parents are like, you don't even know the struggle we had to go through to get to this point. And it's like, you're absolutely right. And so now my thinking on things is there is no struggle to get to this point. I'm just supposed to have been or arrived at this point. Right. And so not realizing or understanding that, no, this takes work. And so when you say it out loud, when you take the time to think about it, it's like, oh, yeah, this makes sense. How can you know someone, as we've talked about earlier, how can you know someone unless you spend the time, you learn their language, you learn the new language of your new family, and where you're going to go and what things mean, what you're not going to do, what you will do, all of those boundaries or, you know, things that you set up within your relationship. You can't know that unless you plan it or unless you practice it or you set those things in motion. And so for me, it's more than just, oh, like I got to be a lazy husband. But it was more so like, well, what does it look like to plan ahead for my family? What does it look like to start structuring these things so that we're living intentionally versus like by happenstance or by accident?
Yeah. So I heard you earlier say, get your education, figure out what you want to do with your life, and then family comes. And so because you were kind of doing them both at the ground level and growing them both, what have you experienced that same thing in your career where you're starting at the ground level and kind of building up? Like, how do you translate what you're talking about in reference to your family, to your business,
to business? Your career? Well, I think for one thing, like, I am someone who I don't have a business mind, even though I'm an entrepreneur. And so let me rephrase that. I lean more into a creative mind than a business mind. And so It's actually in being with you that I'm learning more about what a business looks like, how to think about it, how to pursue it, and then starting to take like business courses, starting to understand like, okay, so when I'm thinking about a business, like, and I'll just separate the two really quickly. Growing up along my career, when I was growing up, I didn't know exactly what I wanted to be, but I knew I could talk publicly. I knew that I liked people a lot. And so I was trying to find something within that lane or that vein. So for college, I focused on communication studies. Mm-hmm. In high school, I did debate. I did something else called prose, which is where you would do like poetry and you would present it. So I did those things and I really enjoyed it. I was really good at it. Did debate. So when I got to college, even at the church that we're at, there were some people who were a year or two, maybe even 3 years ahead of me, who had become attorneys. So I was like, okay, this seems like the right path to go in. Like, you know, are there attorneys? You know, I like people. I like this. I like to understand, and I like to make sure the right thing is said and reached. The right conclusion is reached. However, I realized that, there's a lot more that goes into being an attorney than just what you see on TV, quite obviously. And so as I was working towards that, undergrad was communication studies. I started doing mock trial. I think my first mock trial tournament, not a very good liar. I think the case was essentially on, there's a little boy, this is like a mock case, not really happening. Little boy has a gun inside of a house. His parent leaves to go to work, and the little boy's at the house with a friend. He's playing with the dad's gun. The gun goes off and kills the girl. Who's at fault? Right? So now you have this case being represented. And so I was on the witness stand, and I may have been playing the dad. So some of the questions coming across were like, you had a weapon in your house, right? Yes, I did. You had the weapon loaded in your house, right? Yes, I did. So my team's looking at me like, what are you doing? All right. And then it was like, so in essence, you set up the parameters, or you set up the environment for your son to be able to successfully kill this little girl. Yes, I did. Right.
How did I like, get this guy
for man, the judge who was presiding over our mock trial was even like, what is that? Like, he doesn't understand anything about what's going on. It was embarrassing, right? But it was also because, like, I'm not a good liar, but then two, I didn't prep enough to know how to maneuver and navigate, right? And then I guess as I'm talking about this, maybe my attorney should have been objecting a lot more to help me be like, hold up, right? So that wasn't happening, but I was in that predicament and I was like, okay, this is interesting, but yeah, I still want to do law. Like, and so then I got into prepping for the LSAT, which is what you have to take before you go to law school. So I'm prepping for that. Spent like a few $100, $300-$400 on books. I did an extended borrow from schools, LSAT practice books. And so, you know, I had that and I'm doing a logic games. I'm like, man, this is cool. It's like using logic to understand how these things work. So like when this is a stipulation, and that's a stipulation, that's a work, all that. So I'm getting into it, take the LSAT. My score is like average. And I'm like, you know, I didn't really study like I needed to study again. Don't pass it. What average score again? I think I got the same exact score. So I was like, okay, what do I do? Working for another job, Apple at the time, and I still didn't know what I wanted to do. And you're saying, how do I relate the two of like going up from the ground level? So while I was working at Apple, part of me knew I wanted to do film, and the film thing came from going to Ghana, West Africa on a missions trip. And while I was there, I was like, man, they should be documenting some of these stories because they're really awesome. And this is actually, I wasn't even thinking like that because my mind didn't think documentaries at the time. It was just like, man, it would be cool to have a drone to show all the stuff happening here. So then I get a drone and I'm like, I can't really tell a story with a drone like this. Just, it's not really going to work. So I was like, I need to get a camera. So then I came back with a camera. And I was also at the time doing the music for them. So I was doing some music for them and trying to do both at the same time. And it was hard to do both. But that was the first sort of leaning into that, where I was like starting to get into the film thing. And I was like, okay. So while I was working at Apple, it was, film was on my mind, and what should I do with that, and trying to create. And then on the other side of my mind was like lawyer. So as I was working at Apple, depending on the customer that came in, I would try to get career advice. So if an attorney came in, I was like, yeah, I'm thinking about being a lawyer. Like, what do you think? How should I like get my foot in the door? How do you think I should move? So they were like, oh, you should do this. So they were giving advice. Yeah, you should try to, you know, go and see if you can intern with attorneys or judges and do all those things. And I was like, okay, okay. And then if a creative came in, like one time a guy came in from DreamWorks. And I was like, man, like that seems like really awesome. How did you get into it? How would you advise it? And so he was like, you should just tell stories as much as you can.
So you felt like what I hear you saying is kind of that you were all over the place.
Starting. Yeah. Definitely.
How did you reel it back in?
How did I reel it back in? Because of family advice. My father, at the time, he's still my father. But my father was like, he said, hey, I think he got an email from CUNY. And they were having an open house for their film school, their master's program. So he's like, hey, I think you should go to this. And I was like, school, because I graduated from undergrad with a 2.1. And I was like, if I barely got out of there, I ain't going back in. So I was just like, all right. So I went to the open house. And it's funny, as I go to the open house, I'm hearing them sort of pitch us coming to their school. So they're like, yeah, we have a narrative program and we have a documentary program. And they were saying, out of all the stuff they said, one of the things that stood out to me was like, you know, a lot of people apply to our narrative program, but not a lot of people apply to the documentary. So it would be easier for you to get into the documentary. And I said to myself, well, if I'm going to get in, I'm going to choose the easier path. So I applied for the documentary. Not knowing that my personality and all these other things aligned more on that side. Right. And I'll tell you more about that later. But everything about the person that I was aligned more with studying in that way. And so I actually went to go look into that school because my father was like probably seeing the same thing you just described, man. He's all over the place. He doesn't know what the heck he wants to do. But I can see the creative side of him. Maybe he should swing the pendulum that way. And so that was how I lean all the way into film. So now it's almost like law stuff. Nope. You know,
so, you know, a lot of times we hear people say, what is my purpose? And what is my, what am I called to do? And so do you believe that there is a difference between calling and purpose? Or calling and career?
That's a good question. Let me think about that for a second. What do you think?
Okay. I'm thinking about not necessarily calling and purpose. I think that was like a deeper question. But I'm just thinking about this idea of like, what am I, when people ask the question, what am I called to do? Like, what am I called to do? When they really struggle, a lot of people really struggle with what am I called to do? Do you, side note, do you feel like you are doing what you were called to do?
That's funny. As when you're saying it, I was asking myself, do we make it a lot harder than it needs to be?
Right.
I think a lot of young people ask the question, what is my calling? Oh my gosh, I don't know if I'm called to do what I'm call. And if we boil it down to this most basic, what am I called to do? If you're in a space and it's lacking something that you see it needs and you feel a call or a push to do something, you're doing what you're called to do. So right now, at our church, I serve on the media team. And so our church needs that and needed that right before COVID happened. Otherwise, we wouldn't have been online and been able to reach certain members. So I was called to the media team, right? Like it wasn't a thing of, and I could play, I can and could have played the piano. I can and could have been anything else. But the call went forth for me to do the media team, right? Yeah. And so in that way, if I'm looking at call in that sense, the thing that I'm called to do can change, right? Depending on whatever the need is. Mm-hmm. So I don't think people should struggle or get lost in the maze of, is this what I'm called to do? Mm. Right. The other thing too is there's different phases of your life.
Yeah, and different seasons for sure.
Different seasons, right? And so
that's the baby. I'm gonna go get him for a second because he's having a moment. But I love what he's saying about this call and this purpose, because it, in the young adult world, it is a big question that many people wrestle with, trying to figure out, am I doing the mega big thing that God wants me to do? So at the end of the day, he can say, good job, my good and faithful servant, something that is, you know, big. Am I doing that? And so I think, you know, one person once told me that with your call, it's going to be something that comes naturally to you, something that is natural to you. And you won't have to work at it so hard. But gifts, you may have to work at them harder, even if you are good at them. So a gift may be, I can sing or I can play the piano. I'm going to need to work at that. I'm going to need to master music and do all these things. But if I'm called to do it, then it is something that maybe comes a little bit more natural to me in that way. So just thinking about those things. Again, we are a young family who has a small child who are in the thick. A lot of times when you hear people talk about these things, you hear them on the other side of it, and you hear them already having completed certain milestones. But one thing I like about where we are is that we are completing them as we're talking to you right now about them. We are working through them right in here in this very, very moment.
Definitely. Yeah, we definitely are working on them live and in the moment. And so it makes for a really interesting and unique space to be in, because the call, you were talking about the call versus the gift and how you have to work a little more at the gift and what you've been gifted in doing. And so as you're working in those things, and as we are working sort of live through those things, it's interesting because there are times when you're overwhelmed by not knowing the next thing to do, or you're nervous, or, but it doesn't mean that you don't know anything at all about what you're doing.
Right.
But instead, I think that's where you work out your relationship with God through the thing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So essentially, like, you're, as you're working on something, I think about the times where I'm like, yeah, I have a ton of work. Mm-hmm. And so, but I'm very anxious to make sure that the work is done well. So I'm like, oh my gosh, like, are they going to like this? Is it going to be good? Is the edit going to be good? Is the story going to work? All these things, what's going to happen? And then there are times when there's a break between the work. And so then it's like, does anybody want me? Oh my goodness, am I good enough? I messed up the last time. See, the work wasn't good enough. So now, and then you start to overthink and over everything.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's where I'm like, all right, Lord, I need to be able to trust you through the highs and through the lows, mm-hmm. through the ups and through mm-hmm. the downs, because the thing that you've given me is really uniquely a gift that you've given me. It's something that only I am able to do the way that you've designed me to do it. Mm-hmm. There's a audience you want me to reach. There's a message that you want me to say. There's certain things that need to happen that you've gifted me to be able to do. And so as I'm working in the calling, my gift will just do its own thing, right? My gift will shine or rise above what else is going on at the time.
Yeah, there's that scripture that talks about how our gifts will make room for us. And I think a lot of times people think about that scripture when they think about their purpose, their gifts, and their calling. And how their gifts that they use will make room for them amongst kings or before kings, I think it says. What do you think about that scripture as it relates to your call and your purpose?
Yeah, that's a really good question. It's Proverbs chapter 18, verse 16. It's a really, really cool scripture. And so in that Proverbs, it's talking about a few things before that. It talks about giving a gift can open doors. It gives access to important people, right? And so it, we often hear it and talk about it from the perspective of, like your gifts will make room for you. So like, ooh, I'm gifted to do this thing. So now, because I'm doing it, it's going to open up doors, which is true. Instead of, or looking at it from the perspective of, if I give the thing that I'm doing away, as I'm doing that, important people are going to see it. And not only are they going to see it, but they're going to want to have access to it or to me, right? The scriptures before talk about like intelligent people. This is verse 15. It says, intelligent people are always ready to learn. Their ears are open for knowledge. Mm-hmm. And so it's talking from a place of like, this is what wise people do. Mm-hmm. This is what foolish people do. Wise people are people who they give gifts. They're trying to get the doors open to the next thing. Mm. Right. And so when I think about something you're gifted to do, or when you're giving your gift, as you're doing that thing, more people will notice and want more access to it.
Have you experienced that being the case for you in your business and your career? So, like, catch us up to date, because you talked a little bit about having this, like, tumultuous experience with undergrad and trying to figure out what you wanted to do, and even after graduation. And now that you are, you know, in a better place in that way, catch us up to date about, like, what you are doing today. And if you feel like you have experienced that scripture, like, come to life in your world of your career specifically.
Mm. Yeah, that's a really good point. From the tumultuous point, going to school, graduating school, one of the things that one of my professors said to me was, the job you were working right before you came here, don't go back to it. Mm-hmm. And I took that to heart and I said, okay. So I did not look back to the place that I came from. And so, in moving forward, I was trying to find the next stage and next place, because now, instead of it being, ooh, should I be trying to find lawyers to work with or trying to find people in film to work with, I narrowed it down to film. And I didn't realize, let me just make this little caveat, as you're trying to look for what you're called to do and you jump from thing to thing to thing, it doesn't give you the time to really focus in or learn a thing. And the thing that you're trying to ultimately get to has hundreds, possibly even thousands of other options within it. And so within the world of lawyering, there's so many options, but I'll talk about the world that I'm in, which is film. You could be someone who's in front of the camera, someone who's behind the camera, someone who does stuff on the computer after all of the filming and everything is done. You could be the person who is working with the actors. You could be the person who's trying to work with the agencies that are working to get the actors. You could work with the people writing the stories. There's so many different lanes and avenues and places to work in within the area that you are supposed to be in, or that you have a leaning towards. And so it becomes important to try to find that place, right? So catching you up, we had a class at the end, at the final semester of my master's program, where we did I'm forgetting the name of what the class was, but essentially the class encompassed taking our film, and it was like distribution and something else. And so it was taking it from, hey, what festivals do you want to go to? Now that you've gone into the festivals, what's your plan for getting it distributed to everyone else? Like, what is going to be your thought process, your plan, and everything like that. So in that class, every single week, we would have a different company come and talk to us. So one week we had people who were programmers at festivals talk. Another week we would have people at, Netflix come and talk to us, different things. So one of the people who came in was a company that works on editing trailers. And so from the moment they came in and started talking, I was like, man, they have a really great job. They get to see the entire film before everybody else. They get to edit a 2-minute piece of it, like, down and try to sell the movie before the full movie is seen. And so I was like, this seems like something that I would be really interested in. So the thought, like, came and went when it happened. And I was like, okay, I'll have to at some point reach out to them. A whole year goes by. At the end of the year, I was like, hey, reached out to them in an email. And I said, you guys came and spoke in my class. I really enjoyed what you had to say. I would love to work with you guys if you have anything. And they didn't have anything at the time, but they said, why don't you come in and we'll talk to you. And so I came in, we talked. And this is part of the thing I think that ties to Your Gifts Will Make Room for You. And I just shared, like, the gift of my personal life, which doesn't sound like much at the time, but I was just like, hey, I just had a son, and man, it's going awesome. So we spent a lot of the time talking about kids. And then we talked about trailer editing for a short amount of time. And then they were like, well, even though we don't have work for you, sometimes we have these gigs that come up every now and again. Would you be willing to take that on? So I said, yeah. So the rest is kind of history. And so then from there, I went from editing, like, museum stuff, editing socials for trailers.
And I think he's being a little bit modest when you talk about these things. Like, one of the clips that you edited for, specifically for that Jewish museum thing, one of those clips, they actually have the artwork from that one hanging in Manhattan.
Yeah, all over New York City, right? Yeah. On the west side.
Mm-hmm. So when you edit the promo for their museum, and so they're a pretty popular museum here in New York.
Right.
So when you go onto their site, the trailer that you edited is on that site and goes around to kind of point people in the direction of their museum. So
has about like 15,000 views, right?
Yeah, you did might that. Have
more. That was the last time you looked, but.
And then also, like, you're also being modest about. Let me plug for you. You're also being modest about the company that you worked with. I don't know if you mentioned Parasite, but.
Yeah, so the company that I am working with, that Edit Trailers, edited the trailer for Parasite, which is the first Korean nominated and winning, mm-hmm. Oscar winning film. Mm-hmm. They also work a lot, very closely with Sony Classics. So a lot of the Sony, mm-hmm. Classic films that come out, they're the ones who get the first, or and one of the first dips for edits.
And you just did another one, for them recently. And when we saw it, the edit, it was definitely like somebody ultimately worked on it, but you were a part of the project, the group that worked on the starting pieces of that project. Right.
Laying Obi's the groundwork
with us here, just so you know, if you hear that coughing in the background, it is little Obi. He's visiting with us today.
He is. And he's so, wide awake.
So that's a part of, like, your work. And I think sometimes that is so interesting to me, because for my maternity leave, you were with me the whole time. For, mm-hmm. the pregnancy, you were with me the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the portion that God has given us is a very non-traditional portion, right? And so sometimes people will look at you and say, is he working? What is he exactly doing? And I think that in a lot of ways it looks different for you, because your work can go on for months at a time and then it can stop.
Yeah.
As an editor, as a filmmaker, it can stop for a period of time. Then it, yeah. can go on for a period of time. Then it, right. can stop. And so, but even in that, like, the work you get for the 4-month time isn't equal to the work you would get for the longer period, like,
right.
in pay, I'm saying.
Yeah.
It's equal to the work you would get for the 6-month period of time. So, yeah. I think it's, you know, for a creative, that work-life balance looks very different.
Yeah, it definitely does. And then I think, too, the hustle looks a little different, too, as far as the reaching out and talking to people. And also, too, like, trying to think longevity, because the working a 9-to-5, there's safety in, like, okay, a portion of my check is going to 401k, a portion, mm-hmm. of my check goes to insurance, a portion of my check is going to go to my pockets, a portion of my check is going to go to tithing, like, all these different things that it goes to and travels and touches. And so as it does those things with entrepreneurship, it's definitely a little different in that sometimes your one check has to last a few months, right?
Yeah, and that can be a very challenging thing sometimes. I know being a wife, that can be challenging, where it's like, I definitely understand, you know, where you at, and I understand what you got to do and all the things. I'm here with you. But I think as women, we crave stability. And so sometimes that type of job is not as stable as we would probably like it to be. But, you know, we have had a good balance of communication and a healthy balance of conversation around,
yeah,
what are the expectations in this relationship, and what does it look like to contribute in this relationship? Because, right, I think, you know, if we're looking at traditional roles and contribution, then both of us would be frustrated and upset by each other. But each of us are constantly giving what we can. I hear people all the time talk about this idea of 50-50 marriage, and that's not truth. You know, that's not truth at all. Mm-hmm. Where sometimes I'm giving 75 and you're giving 25, and sometimes you're giving 75 and I'm giving 25, and sometimes we are giving 50-50, but I think for the most part,
some days we both show up with 40.
Some
we're
days
like,
I
oh
show
shoot,
up
we're,
zero.
But we're showing up short. Yeah. Yeah.
Like when I'm sick, it's like I'm zero.
Yeah.
I can't do it, don't want to do it, I don't care about it being done.
Yeah.
The other night, the baby was crawling all over my face and my head, and I was just like, listen, somebody else needs to come in here. We need to hire a mom for the day to get her in here, because I struggle. Yeah. But...
And the other thing, too, though, to the creative side of things is, like, the importance of not... We've also been in this recent season of overturning as many talents. The talents,
yes,
that we currently have,
yes,
right? Because it's easy for us to be like, ooh, this is happening over here, let's jump over there. Ooh, this is happening over there, let's jump over here.
Right.
But to focus in on the talents that we currently have, and then from those things, trusting that they're going to yield some sort of fruit or some result. And so, you know, it, one of the places that I've recently come to is like, all right, I'm going to now.
Always underneath the table rocking.
Shaking it, oh my goodness. And so one of the things that I've come to realize is like, oh, okay, like let me start working towards doing a short film,
mm-hmm,
right? And so with the hopes that like, and the, not even the hopes, but the expectation that from doing and focusing in on this is going to open up a whole other set of line of work and really uncovering the talents that we currently have again. And so one of the freeing things that I've recently realized is like, just because I don't have every single strength needed to fulfill a task doesn't mean that I can't get the task done still.
Right, right.
Right. And so being able to free my mind from that mindset has helped out tremendously in terms of being able to move forward with the short film.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even though I don't have all of the skills that I would think are necessary to get it done.
Yeah, I think you bring up a good point in that a lot of times people, I know myself included, people say, I'll start this project when I get this, or when I have this, or when I can do this.
Right.
Sometimes I think that, you know, I hear it in the church, sometimes people will say, God doesn't call the equipped, he equips the called.
Yeah.
And I've heard that, be said that God equips the called. And so that looks like no matter what I have or don't have or think that I have or don't have, I'm supposed to go anyway.
Yeah.
And I'm supposed to turn on the talent. I mean, that literally is the parable of the 10 talents, where the other said, I didn't do anything for this.
The other one buried it.
Yeah. Because I didn't plant. I know you didn't do it. Like, I don't know what to do
with
this.
He says, I know you to be a hard man.
Mm-hmm.
So because of that, I would rather not risk, mm-hmm, using this thing, mm-hmm, and losing it.
Mm-hmm.
But instead, I buried it so I can give you back exactly what you gave me.
Mm.
And then the response to it is,
you wicked.
Yeah, but mm-hmm. even it was like, don't you know that even if you put this in the bank, it would have yielded some result? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, like mm-hmm. he was like, but because you've done absolutely nothing with it,
that's a whole wicked. Other conversation about finances and money.
It Come is, on, but Bible. even about the concept of your what you've been given to do. And so a lot of times you spend all of this time searching for your calling or your talent and all these things. And mm-hmm. as you're searching, you get stuck and you mm-hmm. stay. You choose stuckness over let me try.
And you're wasting the increase that you could have possibly gotten exactly. from even just trying.
Even just trying. Some mm-hmm. people who were like, I'm not even called to this. I don't know what I'm called to. You know, they don't get started on things until, they don't get started on what they're called to do until later in life. Mm-hmm. But they spend a tremendous amount of time like searching, but they're not idle with their search time.
Mm-hmm. Joyce Meyer says, do it afraid. So she talks about this idea of, you know, it's okay to be nervous. It's okay to feel like you don't have everything that you need to have, but if God calls you to do something, then you ought to do it afraid rather than not doing it at all, because when you do it afraid, then God can equip you along the journey to complete the mission. So it's important to, you know, go just forward. Go. Yeah, just go forward. Just and go. I think, like you said, that's one of the things we've been doing a lot of in this season is like just going.
Just go.
No matter if we feel like we are good enough or, you know, we're not, we see each other's limitations and we just go.
Just go. And I don't even think it's that we think we're not good enough. I mm-hmm. think it's that we don't, we feel we would need more
right.
to take it to the standard that we have. And a lot of times our invisible standard hinders us from starting.
Right, right. Literally, it's invisible. Because even with this podcasting, we were like, if we do this, then we need this. And if I need this, and had to just settle on like, listen, let's get the bare minimum of what we need.
And let's get started. Yeah.
And everything else
will come together.
Will come together. And I just believe that. And I even believe that a lot of the gifts, a lot of the things that we're desiring in our life to happen will only happen when we access
when
the
go.
Gifts that we have and just go forward with just it. Go. You know.
But you're right about that too, because you don't know. Another like quick awesome thing is, even in deciding to pursue the filmmaking thing and going that route, like, you know, you've really helped me to free up a lot of things. So we went to the screening mm-hmm. because you helped to look at what events or things are going on in the city mm-hmm. that cater to the area that you want to focus in on. Mm-hmm. And then from there, now we met somebody who was like, oh, hey, you're a filmmaker. There's another event. Mm-hmm. Why don't you come out to this thing?
And it's a specialized event specifically for networking and like almost like minority, like a mixer.
Right.
Like a minority situation exactly. happening.
And so that doesn't happen if I don't try.
Right, right.
That doesn't happen if I don't settle in on, okay, film's going to be the thing.
Yeah.
And so it's really cool because in looking at this thing, and then going towards film, and let me just be specific about it and not say thing or vague things, but as I chose the path of going to film, my rhythmic son is choosing the path of music right now. But in choosing the path of film, it has now like made the doors that I should go through easier to identify. Which I'm thinking about that scripture, giving a gift can open doors. It gives access to important people. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And when I think about the important people, there you could meet important people, but they could not be important to you because you don't know who they are. Mm-hmm. But mm-hmm. if you know the area that you're supposed to be in, not only will you meet the important people to you, but then these important people can help to make things happen for you, right? And so just as an example, there are times in New York City where we meet celebrities pretty often, right? And so just as a cool quick story, we were downtown at a, what do we go to? We went to, this is coming from either that event or we were just going to get some Junior's Cheesecake. Shout out to Junior's Cheesecake. And so while we were there, we run into a play that is just ending. And as the play is ending, there's a character in the play, and I'm like, I think that guy looks familiar. Who is this guy? And so it turns out the person who was there is the guy who plays Black Manta in Aquaman. And his name is, I don't want to butcher his name, but it's Yahya Abdul-Mateen II. So we see him and I'm like, oh shoot, that's the Aquaman villain. And Dominique's like, who? I don't know who that is. Right? And so it's interesting because, like, I'm a film person, so I can identify and see, like, oh, I've seen him in a film. Oh, I've seen this person here or there. This is so-and-so. And so then I'm like, that's him. So she's like, let's, and Dominique, I appreciate my wife so much. Dominique is a very fearless and bold individual. I would love to ask you about that in a podcast at some point. And so, so she's a bold and fearless individual. So she's like, let's go and meet this person. And so I'm like, oh, wait, what? So she gets out the car, goes and gets a picture with him. At the same time that she's getting a picture with him, I'm sitting in the car waiting with my son, and I see another actor go by. And I'm like, that is so-and-so from a movie, which right now I'm forgetting his name. But it was one of the characters in Candy Girl. I don't remember the story, but it was interesting because it was like, man, this was really awesome. But as you start to work and flow in your gifts, they start to make room for you. And as they make room for you, you meet important people. You brought up
that point of, like, the actor, for what reason?
Because you meet important people to you. Like, it wasn't important to you. You just were like, oh, this is cool. Let me do this. But it was a reminder for me. Mm. Like, not only are we starting to get more focused and honed in on our gifts, mm-hmm. but now I'm meeting people at the top of their game in the gift. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Cool. Like, and I'm using my gift to make room for me. I'm using mm-hmm. my gift to make room for me. I'm trying to, mm-hmm. you know, move forward in this thing. And so it's working out, you know, it's as you apply the Bible and work the Bible, it works for you, yeah. which is really awesome.
Yeah, It's true. Like, even the recent decision that you had to make, you were given the opportunity to either go to Ghana or to stay behind. You know, that's always, when you're talking about decision making, that's always kind of either do it or not to do it.
Right.
And you were very willing with your gifts to do it. Mm-hmm. And then you got a phone call or a text that said, hey, you know, can you spend some more time with me? Can
my we mentor. Talk? Yeah.
Let's spend some more time together.
Like, hey, yeah.
Let's chat together about these documentaries. And then I even heard a tag in there about openings, is what I heard him say. And so in that text, I think he said future openings within the company. And so a part of that is like, you, God is like organizing, like, you, I see your willingness over here. And I know what you've been praying for over here. So I'm opening up doors over here for you as
right,
well
right.
as you are walking alongside me. So we're having conversations about your gift and your career and just kind of being led by God to organize that and to find that. I think if you're a college student and you're just going to school, winging it just for whatever, just get out your parents' house or whatever you're doing. You want to make sure that you talk to God about that, or else you're going to be repeating it again, right? Because God wants to be all up in the career choices that we make, whether it's a PhD, a master's, or bachelor's, whatever, associates. Right. He wants to be all in the decisions that we make in our careers, because I believe that as Gideon's army, he really has a set group of folks who are going out into fields that are specialty to them, but for him. And so, for instance, I'm a therapist, but I'm not just a therapist. I am a Christian therapist. I have a lens and a focus that I speak from, that I talk from, that I listen from, and those things inform how I support couples. Now, I always tell them, I'm not dousing you in oil, and I'm not trying to, you know, force you to believe what I believe, and it is a loving lens that I get the opportunity to look from when talking with couples and trying to help them out of their very stressful moments of life. So that's kind of, you know, where we're going to end it for today. Yeah. But, you know, I'm just thinking about your career. God has really blessed you, Malobi, to walk the journey that you're walking in your career. And, you know, I'm so excited for what he has in store for you, because you are creative and you're very humble at it. And I think you're very talented. A lot of times when I see you interact with people, when I see you in places of business, you are the smartest one in the room. And you are the most knowledgeable person about it. And even if you don't know something, you're willing to either learn it from the person or you're going to do your own research for hours and hours and days and months until you master the thing that you don't know. And so you're a constant learner. And I love that about you. And so I look forward to the mentorship even that you're getting in this career field. Because I think it's going to just really take you to a whole nother level. Yeah.
Thank you for that.
Honey. Also, as a plug, this week Sundance is happening in Utah. So shout out to Sundance. And those of you who are at Sundance and checking out all the awesome films from all these awesome filmmakers.
Because I will see you there one day.
Yeah. So that's the thing. But okay, we can end it here. Thank you guys for tuning in, and come back next time for another episode of Family Business. Obi wants to say something.
You gotta say something.
You gotta say it, buddy. You can't smack the mic. Obi wants to say something. Let's let him. Hello, hello, Obi. What do you have to say about this? So family life with the baby is lit, okay? Career life with the baby is lit. So okay, he's over here doing his ASMR. That's on our next channel, okay? So alright, that's enough. Alright, you guys, have a good time, and we'll see you again on another episode of Family Business.